Hello.
Hi, Ken. That's very clear.
All righty. I'm here.
Thank you. So, a wide-ranging but somewhat short interview of today. Is that fine?
That's great. Kay. I've got plenty of things to do, so.
Okay. So, one thing I have coming up soon that involves you, and it's kind of an aside, for, is putting in for a paper for the North American Labor History Conference in October 2018 at Wayne State.
And all right.
I'm still planning. I've met with people who coordinate it, and I'm still planning to definitely, we're going to do something on Detroit Labor History Tours because it's the 40th anniversary of the conference and of the tour project.
Surely.
So we're going to do something on that, and that's Elsula, Alpern, myself, and Babson.
All right.
But its genesis really comes out of Bill Adelman, who I assume you have memories of.
Oh, yes, sure.
With the Illinois Labor History Society, coming to High and Joyce Corn Blues, where I worked that year in 76, 77, and talking about his tour project in the Labor History Society of Illinois, which was really the genesis, right, for Michigan and Wisconsin and probably others. Do you folks see it that way, that Illinois Labor History Society helped get the Wisconsin Labor History Society you helped run going?
Well, yeah, because we did. Well, I actually was not around at the founding of our society. And
what year was that?
That was 1981, and I'd have to ask Joanne Rica and a few other people who were still are on our board and were in the original board, just how that, because it actually came about with Daryl Holter, who was, I don't know if you recall Daryl, but
vaguely.
He was a staff rep. He was a staff rep for the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, and he was also...
You got something ringing like a phone?
I just turned it off.
That's okay. I just wondered. I didn't want it to be me.
No. I was getting a call on my
phone. So I remember Daryl Holter's name. He was staff rep with the state Fed.
So anyway, he and Mill Lieberthal from the School for Workers and a couple of other people got together in Madison and started the society. Whether that was on the impetus of what they're doing in Illinois or not, I do not know.
That's fine. And so did you guys ever have Adelman come up there while you were involved?
Yes. In probably 1992 or 3 or 4, we had a conference in Milwaukee near the Bayview tragedy site, and because... you know, that coincided with the Haymarket riot. So he came up and talked about the Haymarket while we talked about the Bayview event, yeah.
So that, anyways, one thought I had, and I'm probably going to put in a proposal, is that we try to see if we could do something that involves you or another rep from Wisconsin, somebody from Illinois, and probably Elsula from the Michigan one. I also, and you know, if you're not up for it, maybe somebody else from Wisconsin can come, or, you know, we'll see. But that would be very fun. We also got very much in the DLHT with tours, which was also Illinois. Have you folks ever done tours?
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So have you given tours, or what kind of tours have you done on labor history?
Well, actually, I've done several. We established them somewhere in the 80s because I teamed up. We had two busloads, and former Mayor Zeidler actually did the main work on it, and I took his script and used it in our, you know, in the bus I was on. Me and I think, can't remember who was my partner on that. But, yeah, we did that, and then we did several after that, I do it periodically upon request.
So
And we have a script, and I think it's probably on our website. Yeah.
So I don't think Elsla's got the script on the Michigan Labor History Society. It's definitely not been as active as yours, but we have some similar things. I remember way back, and this would be maybe late 70s, early 80s, I'd have to look up, that I was kind of a tour guide for either a Workers' Ed Local 189 or a UCLEA group that was in Detroit in conference. And mm-hmm. that was sort of how we started with Detroit Labor History Tours. And then we, you know, I used to talk through a slideshow before it was a really synchronized slide tape.
Well, it's funny. We had a labor press association. It may have been either the Midwest Labor Press Association or the National Labor Press Association. What did we call it? ALPA. A conference in Detroit at one point, and we either had a full tour or a partial tour, and I presume Elsla took us on it. I don't recall, but I didn't know he was around at that point. Yeah.
It could have been Dave. It could have been, you probably would have remembered if it was me. It probably could have been Steve Bampson or Ron Alpern.
I honestly don't know.
Well, neither do I.
That's
anyways,
nearly 40 years ago.
Right. Also, Tom Klug is the coordinator again. I don't know if you met him when you came a couple years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I also talked to him about if you did come down for one of those kind of things, is there some way that we could shoehorn in something of yours and my AIW? And he said, probably we could.
Okay.
So, I
well, if you want to draw something up right now until the middle of May, I'm really booked up on things, so I don't have a lot of time to do anything special, yeah.
And I don't know that anything will have to be done special, but we can look into that later. I'll draw something up.
Okay, very good.
So there's one. Is there anything you want to tell me about Wisconsin Labor History Society?
Well, we got a lot to tell, actually. We have our annual conference coming up Saturday, and I'm in the midst of putting that together. We got about 100-plus participants.
Wow.
And we're really becoming very successful, even in the light of all the bullshit that's hit the labor movement.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I think there's
really a new dedication in this state. I mean, we just elected a Democrat to the state Supreme Court. So
I heard that. My yeah, daughter Catherine said she voted for her. So, I mean, sorry, I'm a little too far to come visit. I got too many things going, too. But it looks like a good program. You're going to theme of women workers and unionists?
Exactly, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, we got a lot of good presentations coming, yeah.
Another matter, it's like I'm saying, it's kind of hit or miss, right? At some point, I need you to do another release form for today's interview.
Okay, I don't know if I got it handy. If you could email it to
okay.
me, I'll be glad to, yeah.
I don't know. This is something, actually, if Rick's listening, I don't know if he is, that if we could figure out a way when we've got this kind of continuing set of interviews, he's looking, that I don't have to keep asking the person over and over again to do a new release form each date we do it. But we could talk about it later. But
well, I don't care what, I mean, I don't mind doing it.
Okay.
So it's
great.
Sure.
So talking about the other UAW, last summer, it came up because they did this thing on the anniversary of the Lansing labor holiday.
Yeah.
And because I had done stuff with AIW, I mean, part of my getting involved in this was because I did interviews with AIW 182 people, like Brayman.
Sure.
And I don't know if I sent you a note or not, but I'm going to do one with Mike Pine.
All right.
I was in touch with him recently and said, would you be willing to talk about your time in 182 and then beyond as a staff rep with AIW and then as its name changed? And he said, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, he's in that. He's now retired, he told me.
Right. In fact, he's in Arizona. He's due back to Milwaukee or to Appleton shortly. Yeah.
So you know what I know, because when I call, when we chatted, he was calling me from Arizona.
I
knew nothing about that he went to Arizona. He was not part
of. Well, he's a snowbird now.
Right.
Now that he's retired.
So this is dating me. I remember when Mike Pine was in one of my steward training classes that we held at the AIW 182 hall, and he was one of the young Turk radicals.
Yes, he was, very definitely. And I hate to say it, but George Statesman and myself and a few others encouraged him. So we were probably meddling in local politics, but that's actually they had a pretty progressive leadership all of the way through, that local did, you know, and it was fairly militant all the way through.
Well, right before I arrived, they had this major strike against Motor Wheel in 1974, and I still have, mm-hmm. from Bremen, I got newspapers, just like I got stuff from Bremen on the labor holiday, which is going to end up at our Ari Olds Museum, some pictures I got from the labor holiday. Anyways, there was, however, in those classes, as I recall, a real tension between these young Turks who, you know, there probably were some things they thought could be different and they might have been right about, and then there were things they didn't understand why they're done that way.
Well, right, exactly. And I'm trying to think of who the... Bill Jones.
At
one time, and he wasn't that bad, you know. And then I was, forget the old guy that was the president when I first got around, and he was more conservative, right? Yeah.
I don't.
And then you had Bremen and
right.
And Mike and you know, a few of those guys who, I mean, you know, Bremen one time was pissed off at something I wrote in a convention newsletter, and he and about five guys from his local charged into my office going to beat the shit out of me. I remember that. they were a militant bunch, and I mean, we since, of course, became close and tight friends, yeah.
So here I was as this young kid who had very little union background, who was now teaching for a university labor ed program. Bremen, I don't remember exactly if he was president of the local and the labor council at the same time, or if one preceded the other.
I do not know that.
But at that time, when I started, the UAW the big UAW local, which was Oldsmobile,
right,
must have had 8,000 or 10,000 members, and
I would presume so. Yeah.
Right, and the Verlinden Fisher Body was also pretty large, maybe 6. And my really only success with UAW members in the late '70s and through good part of the '80s. Was with the amalgamated 724, which was their drop forge and other parts suppliers.
Okay.
But on the other side, with the AFL, had lots of involvement, and they very much liked the open enrollment kind of concept, because there was always a tension, too, in labor ed. Open enrollment to anybody or just for one union.
Mm-hmm.
Bremen was a big supporter of the open enrollment. He was a big supporter of our programs. But I'm sure he, at various points, teased this radical kid who came from outside labor, as far as he was concerned, telling his members or the other labor council members, different things. So I'm sure I got in and out of trouble many times. And
well, yeah, I mean, and there was almost a knee-jerk reaction by guys that came out of the shop versus the college-educated types. And so that was very typical in those years, yeah.
Were you seen as okay because you had been involved with the newspaper strike?
Yeah, I had paid my dues, basically. And, I mean, you know, because I had been deeply involved. I had been a leader. I had been blacklisted. So, you know, even though I came out of a white-collar union, I was perceived, and I had gotten to know most of the labor leaders in the Wisconsin area as a result of our strike. And, you know, I could even take pro-civil rights and anti-war opinions, and these guys would argue and call me all sorts of names. But, you know, basically they still respected me as a unionist.
So I had been involved in trying to organize the grad student employees at UMass Amherst when I was in grad school, and that was sort of my only similar thing. But at that point, grad student unions were seen as really bizarre and different.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, there were only a few
that... It didn't mean that they weren't good people or a good unionist or anything like that, but I know exactly what you are saying.
But for me, the big problem was the Ingham County Dem Party was extremely split in the late 70s and through the 80s between the sort of Zoltan Ferency anti-war progressives versus the labor people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was very true over in Wisconsin, too, and particularly in the 60s, because I don't know if you want me to
go ahead,
to
please
relate to some of that or not.
Yeah, I would.
I should or should not.
Please do.
Yeah. Well, you know, basically, in Wisconsin, which, you know, really had a fairly good labor movement, we had our CIO versus AFL conflicts. We had the commie versus anti-commie sentiments that still were reverberating through the union movement in those days. We had the two Alice Chalmers strikes, and they were huge, you know, because at that time there were 12,000-13,000 members of UAW 248 at Alice Chalmers, and we had in 40-41 a long strike, and which ended when the U.S. got into World War II, and then right after the war, 46-47, there was another long strike, which was led by a guy by the name of Harold Christoffel, who was an electrician in the plant and was the president of the local. He was called a communist. The Milwaukee Sentinel newspaper at that time, had a big campaign against 248 as a hotbed of communism, and was basically the leadership, because the Milwaukee burghers, the factory workers in Milwaukee, were German and Polish, with a few Italians thrown in. We were a very ethnic and fairly conservative bunch.
Who was conservative?
And,
which ones?
You know, most of us had fought in World War II, and so there was this patriotic feeling versus the more militant union guys like Harold Christoffel, who really turned out to be a great guy, but he was purged out of 248 to end the second strike. But that was major news, and that commie versus anti-commie attitude carried on. It carried on in the big Seaman Body local, which was then part of Nash and later American Motors, because all the bodies were made up in Milwaukee and shipped down to Kenosha for the AMC thing. So we had about 6,000 members at Local 75 UAW here in Milwaukee, and there was a so-called communist cell. I use the word communist lightly. They were just most part were just very progressive, you know, militant guys, you know, and but anyway, they were called commies. Mm-hmm. I was called a commie at one point too, and so anyway, they had this within locals, particularly UAW. You had this anybody militant was a communist, and mm-hmm. you know, the other ones were, you know, patriotic Americans, so to speak.
Right. Now, we had this in Michigan.
So you had that tension going throughout the labor movement. Now, the AIW, which had been a UAW, AFL, of course, at the time of the split, way back in 39, Homer Martin and the AFL leadership were accusing the UAW guys of being commies, of course.
Right.
And that was, and in, and during the, when the UAW-AFL moved from Milwaukee, their headquarters, to Los Angeles, they hired Ronald Reagan, you know, and they put on an hour-long movie documentary about how the UAW-AFL was a heroic union routing the communists out of the labor movement. And I mean, if you go back to the filming of Salt of the Earth,
right,
for instance, I mean, if you go into that whole story, and one of our board members, Jim Lawrence, wrote a whole book about the boycott of Salt of the Earth. And that was all, you know, of course, that was the time of the Hollywood 10, and so on and so forth. And and labor was very much involved in that. Then you had the labor movement cooperating with the CIA during the 60s and with the U.S. Foreign Service. And so, I mean, there's a lot of that background. And it permeated down into local unions. To the point that when we had the 1972 election and George McGovern was, you know, nominated, and, I mean, George Meany took a hands-off on that race when, you know, Richard Nixon had been a real enemy of working people.
Right.
And so, I mean, God, you know, that whole communist thing permeated the labor movement, you know, and it was a way to split us up. And management loved to accuse the militant unionists as being communists. And then, of course, and, you know, one of the points I always made, I was just a little too young by about a year and a half to be in World War II, you know, and then, of course, we got into the Korean thing. But virtually everybody that I represented were veterans of World War II. Now, you have to remember where most of us came from. I never was out of the state of Wisconsin, you know, as a young person. And most of us never went anywhere until we got into the service. And then we saw the world, and then we were out saving the world. So we came home very proud of our accomplishments. And then to have a bunch of long-haired college freaks like you, John, you know, accusing us of being hardheads and so forth, that turned people off. I didn't think that way. I'm just saying, I'm quoting,
you know, just fine.
What. And you were very much aware of that at that time, because I presume you were in college at that time.
I'll tell my piece in just a second. I want to keep going.
Well, I mean, basically
that's fine.
That whole thing permeated the labor movement, I think, well into the 80s.
No question. So I'll make this brief. A couple of my colleagues in the labor ed program at the university here at MSU, got involved in the local Dem Party, and not all of the quote-unquote progressives weren't unionists. There were a couple important leaders locally who came from the labor and were part of that and were close to Zoltan Ferency and others. But the majority of the labor people went with the labor kind of position.
Oh, right.
And we had something maybe a little bit more unique in that you had a UA in Michigan, UAW camp councils were sometimes as large or larger than the AFL-CIO council, and they operated completely separately. So as a labor educator, I related to both of them, and in a town like Lansing or Flint, they were more UAW than AFL. It would be different in Jackson or Monroe and such. Anyways, a couple of my colleagues got involved in it and got themselves not just labeled funny, but actually kind of made themselves not very useful as labor educators. And I was very careful, and I didn't do that because Lansing was one of the towns that I was to help set up classes. So I only got involved in campaigns for GOTV. And it came to be that people would call me GOTV John because I would not get involved in the monthly meetings. I'd never ran for office in the county party, but I did GOTV work because everybody was fine with you doing GOTV.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, a couple of these other characters got in real trouble. It's funny that you mentioned Daryl Holter, because one of the things I was going to ask you about, I have an old labor history magazine from spring of 88, which is called Sources of CIO Success, The New Deal Years in Milwaukee by Daryl Holter.
Hang on to that.
I will.
Or copy it and send it to me sometime.
If you've never seen it, I think, anyways, it's a lot of the things
what,
that you
what, excuse me, though. What is the date of that? Because we may have it in the office.
Spring 1988,
okay.
Volume 29, number 2.
Okay,
if you can't find it, let me know. Anyways, it has things from about the Harold Christoffel wrote a letter to the author, but it also has an unpublished paper from Steve Meyer, your buddy. And it's all about Milwaukee and much of what you were just describing. It even has, I'm pretty sure this is going to be our Bob Ripas, one footnote says, several CIO leaders, including Harold Christoffel, had been active in the Young Socialist. Two seminar papers by a young activist, Robert Ripas, reflect a pro-socialist, anti-communist interpretation of the CIO success. And if he told me about that, I forgot that. But an unpublished paper done for University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in 44 called Analysis of a Strike, and another unpublished for University of Wisconsin and Milwaukee called The Socialist Party of Milwaukee. And that very much would reflect the Bob Ripas I knew and his politics.
Sure.
No,
I knew Bob, so yeah, sure. Yeah.
Very anti-communist, but very pro-socialist, And I always thought Milwaukee was somewhat the model for what got called sewer socialism.
Well, it was, and that's why, it was, basically... they were dedicated to efficient government, and I do mean that. And, of course, along with it, there was a social justice thing to it. They were racist. I mean, the early socialists were. Victor Berger, who is kind of the founder of, and he was a unionist and very strong for unions, but Victor Berger has some terrible racist comments, and I recall there was a grade school that we used to go to social center dances at when I was in high school called the Victor Berger School. And of course he was really a very big hero, and his wife Maida Berger was you're kind of the founder of the Department of Municipal Recreation here in the city, where we have a marvelous and historically had a marvelous program after school and summer times and for both kids and adults. So there was a great, they really believed in serving the people, but unfortunately they were racist, and that was fairly typical, you know.
How were they on involvement of different European ethnic groups?
Well, as long as you're European, but then of course I don't know how they were, because the Southern Europe, we were originally settled by Yankees in Milwaukee, and then with the 1848, revolutions over in Germany, we got infiltrated with a bunch of Germans, and most of whom were, liberal, and the Turner Society still thrives here in town, and so on and so forth. And the Turners are liberal, and they actually were pro civil rights, even back in the abolition days and so forth.
How were the relations among your AIW members between those groups and then the Croatians and Slovaks and others?
Well, I don't think I think there was, when there was an anti-Italian thing very strong in the early 20th century. There was a tendency to downgrade Poles, Polish as being dumb and stupid and, Polacky. And so there was that, that is pretty much, now it doesn't matter whether somebody's Polish or German or Italian or Irish.
But did that still affect your life when you were working in labor in the 50s and 60s?
Not particularly.
Okay.
There was an inherent bias that Poles were dumber, and you know what I mean?
Right.
And stuff like that, but I don't see that it affected. And one thing the labor movement seemed to teach a lot of people was tolerance of others. And that's an untold story, because we could tell hundreds of stories where once we get into a dispute and you find out that you're walking a picket line with, people of other types, you all of a sudden begin a kinship, which builds and breaks down those prejudices. And I've seen that happen.
So I had a sense I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that was all I wanted to say.
I had a sense in the early 80s in working with 182 were classes that I did for some of the locals along the lake, along Lake Michigan. There were AIW locals and forges and foundries. And then there were some south of us down in, I don't know exactly, but in the Jackson-Adrian area, maybe.
Right, sure there were, yeah.
My sense was that in the early 80s, there was still some tension in the locals, because there were black workers in some of these places, but sometimes smaller numbers, and that they were still working on it, but that was something the International was trying to address.
Oh, my God, yes, yeah. There was definite race. I don't mean to say that once you got into a union, that racism ended. No, I was not saying that at all. I was saying that very often, white guys who might have been racist tend to lose that a little bit once they get to work with others, and particularly if they're into some sort of a union struggle. That was all I was saying.
No, that's exactly what I was wondering. And I didn't bring them with me, but I remember some documents that I had that were about some AIW attempts. Either they might be pictures from conferences or other things. It might have been things in a newspaper that you would have written as editor that tried to talk about race relations.
Oh yeah, yeah, and we did education classes on that. George was particularly dedicated to that. He was a lifelong, you know, pro civil rights, I mean, it really consumed him. So whenever we could do something, sometimes more subtly than openly, because sometimes an open discussion didn't solve anything. We had a definite agenda to support civil rights. Yes.
So on that topic, can you remind me what were the years you were editor?
Well, I started in 1968. That's 50 years ago, and I was editor until approximately 1983 or so, and then I became assistant to the international president, and I stayed there until 1992. So I was there for 24 years, about 10 of which I was assistant and oversaw the paper, but we had hired by then somebody to do the paper on a regular basis.
What was her name?
I still did writing for it, but she edited.
What was her name?
Got it out. Ann Bingham. Ann,
yes,
with
yes.
Bingham.
No, I did. I don't know if it was Walter's influence or Bill's or whose, but they would bring me in, at least in the Michigan-based conferences, and I'd do some kind of session on something. Maybe it was history. Maybe it was dispute resolution, steward training. I don't know, but I remember her.
She would have been there taking pictures. She actually was is a really cool person, but she was kind of abrasive to our members. Not everybody liked her, but she, you know, deep down was a fine person and a very good editor too. Yeah.
So staying on relations for a minute, I don't know how much longer we're going to go. I'm not sure how long we've been talking, but.
Well, it's been almost an hour.
Okay, so maybe about 20 more minutes, and then we'll schedule another. Or you can just tell me, let's save these. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about was we had a gentleman here at MSU, unfortunately died young, who part of the reason I also got involved in AIW and did more things in Milwaukee. Went to work for you folks, for the AIW, and
ooh.
Jeff McDonald.
Oh, my God, yes, yeah. Jeff and I got quite close while he was here, yeah.
And when Jeff was here, we had started our New Directions Federal OSHA grant to train based by university labor education programs. Across the whole state, and Jeff was the one who started it, and when I was hired, that was part of my assignment, as well as Lansing and Middle Cities for setting up basic programs.
Mm-hmm.
And after Jeff left, then we hired Scott Toby,
and he
did safety and health. Anyways, there is a, did you ever see the journal called Labor Studies Journal?
I believe so.
Anyways, it was done by the University College Labor Education Association. And,
okay.
And there was an edition, Spring 1981, which is the sixth volume, so it's way back there. The theme issue was occupational safety and health. And one chapter about employee rights was done by Helen Elkis. You probably related to her at some time. She was at Illinois.
Yeah.
One chapter was by George Haglin, of course, mm-hmm. of Wisconsin School for Workers, and you worked with them all the time.
Right.
One was by John Rivette and Scott Toby about building worker competence. One was by Jeff McDonald, New Directions, the Allied Industrial Workers Focus on Bargaining Committees and Contract Negotiations. There were other chapters too. How much did you get involved in any safety and health kind of work when Jeff was so involved with that?
Well, actually, quite a bit. I didn't do any direct education on it, but of course, I did a lot of stories on it as editor, and then when I became assistant to the president, OSHA was a very big part of our program, and I forget exactly how Jeff fit in because he was assistant to Ray McDonald, no relation,
right?
As research director for the union, and that's just mine.
Yep, you got a call.
And I'm getting calls. Yeah, and anyway,
maybe 10 more minutes.
And then we hired Milan Rasek. And who had been the assistant regional director for OSHA in Chicago, and we hired Milan, and he took over the program for another 15, 20 years until we merged with the paper workers, and then he continued on for a while, and then he went to the Boilermakers, and did a lot of work out in the field.
So how about, I'll let you think about this. We come back next time. We talk about some of your interactions. And we touched on it briefly, but maybe we can do a little more. Your interactions with some of these other folks, like Jeff in terms of that. But then the next thing he got into was pensions and plant closings.
Ray is really Jeff did some great work. And
Well, anyways, what I was thinking of, if you and I could talk a little bit about those kind of things and those interactions, then that might lead to one of us actually doing an interview with Ray.
I emailed Ray after you and I talked last week, was it?
Right.
And I haven't heard back from him, so I'll have to call him direct.
Anyways, I thought that that relates to another piece we just touched on before, but you could tell me more about, which was pattern bargaining and how you related to others in the industrial union department?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were very strong supporters in that and very much involved, and we did a lot of coordinated bargaining. I was on the GE bargaining coordinating committee in the 1969 strike, for instance, and so on and so forth. Yeah, we were strong supporters as a small union. I mean, it was important for us to kind of piggyback with the big guys, and our members appreciated that. But we had a very difficult time because we, particularly with things like Clark Equipment, as I recall, and it may have been Dana, it may have been a few others, but we tried to coordinate contract dates, so they would all terminate on the same day, but the employers were too smart to fall into that, and of course they would then buy off us local by local. So in a sense, it was a bargaining chip that helped us selfishly take care of individual locals. So, and of course, weakened the coordination, but it was great for sharing of information.
Next time we could kind of pick up on a little more about OSHA and related topics, pensions and plant closings, and how you would relate in terms of writing stories about these. I'd like to hear a little more about how you worked with the people in the other departments. A little more on your recollections about coordinated bargaining, like you just mentioned, the GE or the Clark Equipment. I assume that's
sure.
The same Clark Equipment I did classes for in the Jackson area.
Right, exactly.
And then that could lead to...
Remember those guys. I can picture those guys right now, but go ahead.
So those would work also well as kind of a wait before trying to interview Ray. And I also didn't want to leave passing I don't know if you've seen it yet, Amy Goldstein's new book.
You about Janesville?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In fact,
I'd like to talk to you about that a little bit.
In fact, I believe she interviewed me. She was in town anyway a couple times, and then she came in to do an author's thing once the book was out. Yeah, she was impressive, yeah.
Partly the book rings for me because it's so similar to some Michigan stories.
Unfortunately, it's a story that's being repeated far too often, John. You know that.
Well, I know that, but I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So
I think
this was great fun. I hope you thought so, too.
Well, you just let me wander on. And there's nothing an old man likes more. So,
we'll go through the process of setting up another one of these in a month or so.
All righty. And I hope you feel better.
And I do, and I hope you have a great conference. Sorry I can't be there.
All righty.
Thanks, Ken.
We'll
have a good day.
We'll see you, John.
Bye.
Bye-bye.